the Authentically Successful Show. I'm Carol Schultz, founder and CEO of Vertical Elevation, a talent equity and leadership coaching and advisory firm. We partner with founders and CEOs to create talent-centric organizations where they either don't currently exist or rebuild organizations into talent-centric cultures. We are committed to supporting your values through creating a healthy, successful company, leveraging the best talent, retention, development, and succession strategies. Listen at the end of the show for information about becoming my next guest on one of the most important podcasts for building thriving companies in about 40 minutes. Here we go. Hi, and welcome to the Authentically Successful Show. My guest today is Jim Barnish, founder and managing partner of Orchid Black. Jim, welcome.
Carol, thanks. Love the name of the show, Authentically Successful. Forget about that. Wow.
Great. Tell us at a high level a little bit about Orchid Black and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So imagine you're a tech CEO and you've built a really strong company and by all measures have achieved lots of success. You're hitting some targets, but maybe missing others. And then you meet a team of growth experts that's able to help you understand exactly and quickly what you're able to do to make your business worth much more. That's us. And we'll also help along the way to help you execute in a really interesting performance-based model that founders really love.
And you founded the company just about 3.5 years ago, yeah?
Yeah, correct.
So tell me about the impetus behind that.
Well, Orchid Black's designed for founder-led companies that are in the black or profitable, hence the name.
Very good. I was wondering about that.
Yes, absolutely. And they likely don't meet the high growth expectations of a VC or private equity firm.
Okay.
In fact, that's kind of where I came from prior to starting Orchid Black was the venture capital world and saw so many companies that we were rejecting that weren't in the top 1%. And also so many of the companies that we were investing in that were blowing a lot of capital and thought that between the two, there had to be another way to both help more companies that weren't necessarily in the top 1% growing companies and also not only grow fast, but grow smart. And that's where our grow smart, grow fast mantra came from. And ultimately, you know, what we do, we focus on those companies that could be worth a lot more, have a lot going right with them, but have a lot of opportunity for growth. And typically, you know, we really are focused on commercialization, product market fit, things along those lines that a lot of founders struggle with, especially in the technology world.
Right. Yeah, it is a huge challenge. So did you bootstrap the company? How did you build it financially?
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. We did bootstrap. My co-founder, Steven, and I had spent about a decade together doing what we do at Orchid Black, another decade prior to that, you know, separately. And ultimately, bringing together all the work that we had done as operators, consultants, investors, and M&A folks, started the firm with about 10 people, 10 partners, and have now grown it to just over 30 folks on the team.
Right.
Completely bootstrapped.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So this initial 10 people, how did you find them? What were you looking for? Did you make any mistakes? that initial batch of people?
Oh yeah. Did we ever, not for any reason other than the fact that we had had really good relationships that we had formed over the years and, folks that we loved a lot that had done great things, but that weren't the perfect fit for where we were, where we're going. We had been fortunate enough to work with a lot of great folks, serial entrepreneurs, C-level operators, who had seen and done it all. And they had a bunch of exits under their belt. And ultimately, you know, those folks typically fall into one of two categories. One is relying on what they've done. The other is relying on what they can do based on what they've done. And I think we had a lot of folks in the first bucket, which is okay when you're looking to be an advisor or, you know, on a board. But when you're hands on in a company like we are with the founders that we serve and that we work with, it's a little bit different story. And so our evolution and our learnings really came from the need to only have folks who can still do it all, who can still get their hands dirty, mm-hmm. whether that's in sales, marketing, operations, and who want to do that and eager to do that in a hands-on capacity.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any financial ramifications of that first batch of people and those that didn't work out?
Financial ramifications, only that we couldn't grow as fast as we wanted to. Personal ramifications, if I'm honest, having to spend probably, 100 plus hours every week doing a lot of cleanup and jumping in and making sure that it did not affect the clients that we were serving. Mm-hmm. It only affected us as the founders in the time that we had to spend on it. And right. So it was a lesson learned, and it was a really good lesson learned at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. Tell me a little bit about your revenue model and how you make money.
Yeah. So our focus is on aligning with companies that are in their early growth stage. So typically not companies with a lot of cash on hand. Mm-hmm. They are profitable, but they are looking to reinvest in growth. And as part of that growth, we're bringing the growth experts to the table who, if they were paying cash, would definitely be probably a bit over of what they could afford, a bit higher than right. they could be able to afford.
Yeah.
So the majority of our fees are actually taken as upside or, equity, percentage of sales, something that aligns with the goals and performance of what we're doing. We're not your typical consultants that'll, hand you a, $1 million report and say, here you go, good luck. Sure. We are the folks that'll show you exactly what you need to increase the value of your business and then work alongside you to do it. And we'd be crazy if we wouldn't bet on ourselves and on the clients that we work with or the mm-hmm. clients that we serve. And so that's that performance-based model that I'm referring to.
That's fantastic. So what percentage are you taking in equity versus cash?
It depends on the company. Okay. We aim for a 50-50 blend, across the board, just to make sure that, our level of risk is also kept in mind. Some companies a little more, some companies a little less, but it's not always equity. Sometimes it is certain valuation milestones along the way where we are, bonused, if you will, for achieving certain milestones with the team. Sometimes it's percentage of sales if our engagement is entirely focused on just driving sales growth.
Yeah.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, there's always a cash price to everything. And it's just a conversation with the founders about how to turn that into something that makes us both really happy with the opportunity ahead of us and how Orchid Black can partner with those founders.
Yeah. So, I have noticed over my almost 30-year career that when you hire or when you look to attract really senior level people and say, oh yeah, by the way, we're not going to be paying you millions of dollars a year, it's hard to attract those people. So how have you been able to attract these C-level operators? I mean, do they just have so much money in the bank they're ready to retire and willing to do this that they're, the people can afford to work for less than they would normally be working for? And, and pay their bills.
Yeah. I think it's interesting you asked that, because that first group of people that I mentioned earlier really fit into that category around, net worth, exactly where they needed it and did not need to work, if you will. Right. I think, that caused some of the, not wanting to work in some cases. I would say our group now may have some good nest eggs built up mm-hmm. from their time as executive operators and have a couple exits under their belt, but they're looking and hungry for more. And so it's not necessarily that they need to make the cash that they would if they were just on any old job, right? Mm-hmm. But they are looking to make a difference in a number of companies and impact, and also be compensated for that impact.
Yep.
And so it really is the upside that they're there, that they're here for. That is much higher than they would be able to make if they were doing a full-time job elsewhere.
Yeah. That's so great. I was just thinking as you were saying that, wanting to ask you, what do you think the driving factor is? And that's, I always tell people, for me, it's the opportunity to make a difference. It's clearly the same with your people.
It absolutely is.
And what I believe when people, when that is what's underlying, everything else will flow in well.
100%.
You're not just there for the cash. I mean, yes, you want that payout, Right. But if you truly are able to make a difference, everything will come.
If you're crazy, if you didn't want to have a financial freedom or financial wealth, mm-hmm. right? But at the end of the day, it's got to tie to impact. And if you can be, if you believe in what you can do, why wouldn't you put your money where your mouth is and make mm-hmm. sure that that impact is connected to that compensation?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. you talked about the work that you had done at one of your prior companies that's similar to this. How long ago was that? And what would you say? And was there anything else in your background that prepared you to say, this is what I want to do now, and I'm going to launch a company?
yes and no. My beginning began at my family's business at the ripe young age of 15. And we grew from about 40 million to now, over a billion today. I wasn't there for all of it. I was there for the first half of it. But getting thrown in business at age 15 teaches you a lot really quickly, especially when all you've got is the learner's permit and a lot of energy and drive. And the ultimate, kind of connection point to me in leaving that was really looking at my upside and my opportunity to move beyond the family business. And as I did that, my passion for technology met with, my desire to grow businesses, which I had been doing to date for the family business, and ultimately ended up serving technology companies in a number of capacities, mm-hmm. Consultant, operator, and not entrepreneur yet, but got invited to be a part of something really special here in Florida, a venture capital firm that was just getting off the ground called mm-hmm. Florida Funders. Right. A bunch of angel investors around the table that were looking to do something really special and help them to form a process and a methodology for driving investment into early stage technology companies. Mm-hmm. Saw all of the companies that were being so well served by our model and the venture capital model in general. But also so many that had a lot of opportunity within them that were not being served, and started a company coming out of that called Startup Solutions that was all equity, no cash, only focused on, really certain elements within these companies, getting them VC ready, if you will. Mm-hmm. Learned a lot with that, especially that you can't run a business on all equity and can't scale a business on all equity. That's right, for sure. Right. And also that there had to be some skin in the game, if you will, some cash from founders to really, mm-hmm. believe in what we were building. And out of that is where Orchid Black came from, which is a blend of cash and equity in our model now, cash and upside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But still focused on that same message, that same mantra around, you don't just have to grow fast, you can grow smart and grow fast.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. The family business, was this started by your folks or a generation prior to that? And what's the business?
It started by my stepmom's uncle, and my dad came in as CFO. And ultimately, I was brought in as, an M&A growth guy to help mm-hmm. the business grow. Started off as an intern, ultimately ended up as a leader within the organization pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And the business is roofing distribution that is quite kind of on the other side of sexiness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But ultimately a business that has a lot of legs to it and was in a very interesting space around acquisition at the time. And so as the family was concentrated mostly on growing the business in its existing capacity, my focus was on growth through an inorganic growth mm-hmm. through acquisition. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, a lot of lessons learned there. I tried to bring logistics technology into the company. acquiring a technology business within a distribution business, mm-hmm. very hard. mm-hmm. Damn near impossible when the culture's not ready for it. Completely, fell out and ultimately ended up turning into a zero. Learned a lot from that and also caught a lot of heat from it and really started to think about, what does it take to drive an acquisition in the company that you're in? Because not every acquisition is good for every company. And that was something that, you know, we had never done before. We had never learned, and sounds silly saying it out loud and now, quite frankly, but was a really important lesson nonetheless.
What did you think was the biggest challenge? You know, not every acquisition is good for every company. And that's true. And you know, often companies acquire companies and they don't know how to even integrate them, or it takes years to do so. Yeah. And, you know, you end up having a ton of turnover. So, I mean, what were the issues that you were having?
Yeah. My desire to innovate, meeting what the company needed was part of it. My desire to drive higher valuations when the company had a really foundational business and acquisition mm-hmm. strategy that was mm-hmm. working quite well. And ultimately, you know, going off of strategy, right? Having a plan that it was agreed to, that everyone was aligned on, and then deviating from that plan because I thought innovation and higher multiples were what we needed at the time.
Right.
And that's just not the case. Strategy is following strategy, and alignment is incredibly important for building, right?
Preaching to the choir.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about how do you find the companies, or do they find you? Are you marketing? You know, and are you competing at all against, you know, traditional institutional VCs?
It's a great question. We're more at the intersection of where consulting meets private equity. Venture capital is sometimes actually a lead source for us, as mm-hmm. is private equity. You mm-hmm. know, the companies that weren't VC or private equity ready, that you know, those institutional firms see the opportunity and know mm-hmm. what we can do with them. A handoff of sorts. Get a lot of our deal flow from our partner programs around, you know, attorneys, accountants, investment bankers that are involved in the transaction ecosystem mm-hmm. That also, you know, compete with, or not compete rather, but take part in what that growth looks like for those companies and are true trusted advisors mm-hmm. for those founders. And also wealth management professionals that see the opportunity to really manage mm-hmm. a lot of wealth on the other end of an mm-hmm. exit, because that's what we're driving towards after all. But that's really just our referral basis. And obviously customers, you know, refer us in as well. The beyond referrals is kind of what we needed to start thinking about a year ago. That was something that was a bit newer for us because we're the tech experts, not necessarily the services experts. Mm-hmm. Growing a services company is obviously quite a bit different than growing a product company. So we had to bring in a few experts of our own, outside experts who were growth services experts, beyond, you know, our product and tech expertise. And one of those folks is now a managing partner. Howard Joyce is our third managing partner, who's built, you know, a number of nine-figure services firms in the past. Okay. And part of that was really just discipline on realizing what gaps we had on our team, mm-hmm. What we needed to do to meet some of our growth goals, and then bringing in those outside experts to drive some of the, you know, go-to-market initiatives that we needed to do beyond just hand off referrals.
Mm-hmm. How have you gone about finding, you know, going from 10 to 30?
Yeah. 10 to 30.
Yeah. People, employees.
Oh, got it. Sorry. Growth is hard on the talent side of that question is probably the harder question than than the actual revenue
right.
side
well,
of
sure.
it.
That's exactly my question.
Yeah. The value proposition that we offer to the market is similar to what we offer internally. And it is the ability to really quickly identify where you've got growth opportunity and help you grow. And so we've got a lot of internal programs where we do that with our up and coming talent. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of expertise on the team with our operating partners that is really leveraged across the organization mm-hmm. internally as well. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you know, we are bringing in a lot of millennials into our full-time employee group that think differently than our senior level operating partners.
Very good. Yeah.
it's been a, you know, it's crazy how disengaged the millennial workforce is from their jobs and the stats that are out there, right? I mean, 55% of millennials are not engaged at work. That is a crazy stat.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's costing the US economy over $30 billion a year. And so we'd be silly not to recognize that and think about that for ourselves. But they're here because they want to grow. They want to build something great and making it a really fun place for them. And but also a place where they can learn really quickly has been a big part of that employee value proposition.
That's really good. Well, and not only that, you know, you're bringing in a completely different culture and you're certainly getting away from any groupthink, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at the list of any toughest challenges for businesses and you'll find hiring and retaining employees at or near the top of that. Yeah, right.
Right. Well, and it's because companies don't often, well, you know, as we've talked, they don't really understand how to do that. They think they do, but they don't. And they don't realize that there's a whole process. There's a lot of steps you have to put in place before you even think about hiring your first person.
That is,
we just need to recruit people, but that's really the last step in the process of, yeah, of building, well, what of building a sustainable company that's right. You know, that functions as a talent-centric organization. What do you see your clients, your portfolio companies, wasting most of their time and money on?
Wow, that is a tough one. I would say the main thing is being so focused on the day to day and working in the business that they forget to work on the business and thinking that that's almost a waste of time to work on the business. Mm-hmm. It is a dangerous place to be when you are only focused on just execution of the plan and not looking at what impact things are having on your plan. And so I would say the one of the first things that we do is making sure we slow down to speed up and that we form alignment within the team. And that we really teach people how to work on their business, and also avoid burnout along the process, along that journey, which I've ran into and have a lot of personal growth that I've gotten from my own founder journey and burnout.
That's terrific. Is there anything that bugs you about your industry?
There's a lot that bugs me about the consulting industry. Okay. I would say, you know, there's a reason you don't see consulting or methodology or things like those typical buzzwords on our website. Consulting firms charge a retainer to interview and tell you what you already know, or use a standard playbook that doesn't necessarily go to the heart of the company's issue.
Right.
And they get paid no matter what. The founders we work with want a partnership where they can get expert advice, but also get experienced operators that help run the business and have aligned incentives. That's not consulting.
That's right. I agree.
And so we needed to find people that would see our vision of providing this service to founders in the way that worked for them best, which is, again, why we can only scale so fast, because there's only so many of those people out there.
That's right. Good people are really hard to find.
Oh my God. Tell
me about
it.
The best people are hard to find.
Yeah. So especially
2%, which is probably what you're looking for. 2 to 5%.
Top 1%, because they're also comfortable with the model of betting on themselves and only getting paid when the founder gets paid. Right. And we are so proud to have a business model and a team that is that founder focused rather than consulting firm focused.
I love it.
Because, you know, we've got the methodology, we got the team, we got the experts, we've got what consultants have, but we bring a very different operational mentality to it. That is what excites the founders that we work with.
Well, and, you know, to your earlier point, you know, we've all got skin in the game, right? And 100%. When everybody has a little skin in the game, things seem to work pretty interestingly from that standpoint.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
What would you say is the most outdated advice in your industry?
The most outdated advice, I would say, that's a good one. there's a lot of marketing gurus out there that will tell you the funnel is dead, you know, the conversion funnel is dead, and they're lying. It's not dead. It's time tested. It's true. Mm-hmm. And if done right, it is the backbone of every fast growing technology company. Mm-hmm. And anyone that tells you otherwise is just trying to sell you something. thanks to things like the product-led or PLG movement, product-led growth movement, there's more than one way to design your customer acquisition funnel. But it always follows awareness, consideration, and conversion and buying, right? It's how we as humans just simply work. You pay attention, and then you trust or buy. It's simple at the heart of it. Ultimately, I think that's it. It starts with the creation of your own manifesto or your own strategic narrative. And it drives towards either a sales conversion funnel or a marketing conversion funnel that's driven through a go-to-market strategy. It's not just go out there and hire a salesperson, go out, hire a CRO, right? It's how do you want to grow? How do you get to the people you're trying to help? And ultimately, there's a funnel that's attached to it.
At what point do you typically enter with these tech firms, these startups? I mean, have they taken a seed round from anybody? Have they taken any money? Are they bootstrapping? Like, where are they in their journey?
The majority of them have not taken institutional capital on. Okay. If they have, it's some. But institutional capital or VC PE money is not getting in the way of what we need to get done, which is very important. They've typically experienced some level of pretty sincere pain, whether that's hitting a growth obstacle or wall at 5, 10, 20 million in revenue, or just realizing that they're so stuck in the day-to-day, they don't know what to do next. They're also looking to exit, and they typically don't know what that looks like or how to plan for it. And so we bring all those things together. And whether it's engaging for sales or marketing or something that's a true pain point initially, it turns into a much larger, how do we maximize the value of the business on the path towards exit conversation. And we'll know by the first conversation with somebody whether they're going to be coachable enough for our plan or our program to work. Because if they're not, because we put our fees up at risk, or a lot of our fees up at risk, we've got to be very particular and approach from that investor mindset in that capacity.
Yeah, no question. So when you meet with, I assume you meet with the founding team, is that what it is? The founders, when you first start talking to them?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you determine whether they're going to be coachable? And do you look at, because I have this conversation a lot. A lot of people think coaching is actually advisory work. So I'm curious how you determine if somebody's going to be coachable. And when you say coachable, what do you mean by that?
I definitely do not mean that we are executive coaches. That is a specialty in and of itself.
Right. Okay.
And I have one, and I'm so thankful for my executive coach. Shout out to Mike, and would not know what to do without him, quite frankly. That is a specialty. That is a discipline. That is human behavior. What we do is truly advisory and execution work. Yep. Okay. But what I mean by coachability is the ability to listen, and the ability to take that advice and understand that there are experts at the table that know better than you. That's what you're doing. That's why we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to make this work, there has to be a belief and an understanding that not handing over the reins at all, but helping to elevate you to be a better CEO, to be a better founder, and understanding that there's a reason we've got a history of exits, and there's a reason that we've got a programmatic approach towards getting there. And we're going to customize that for you. But we got to hold hands and get there together.
Tell me a little bit about your company culture and what might make it unique.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've kind of got two spectrums. We've got our very, very senior level folks, and we've got our up and coming leaders that are all millennials. And so what really brings that together, honestly, is me. I'm the only person on the senior team that is under the age of 40. I understand what it's going to take to connect those two things, and I've worked really hard to try to build a bridge. I wouldn't say we have the perfect bridge, but I would say that it is a focus. It is a core thing that companies don't concentrate on enough. And culture to us really means growth and results. And at the end of the day, those values connected with what we call intellectual honesty, or knowing what you're great at, but also knowing where you need help mm-hmm. growing, is what we preach with our clients as well, not just internally.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting and what I think is meaningful value proposition and culture proposition mm-hmm. that is relentless focus on growth and results.
So where do you see yourself growing or investing in resources and for growth over the next year?
Yeah, we've got a very solid market research competency, which is where a lot of those millennials mm-hmm. that as younger leaders start out. We're investing heavily in that competency because it not only drives our growth practice or our growth services, but it also allows us to help some enterprise clients for some higher cash engagements that allow us to take more risk on with growth mm-hmm. companies. And those enterprise companies that hire us really, that they get so much out of the research that we do for them and thought leadership. And what's great about that is this research team is really focused on data gathering, insights, right? Turning insights into knowledge, and that knowledge is strategy at the end of the day. And so they're learning on the ground from experts on research and strategy that's ultimately going to provide them with either a path towards becoming mm-hmm. a younger operating partner or a younger version of our senior folks.
Right.
Or the ability to start their own business, be their own entrepreneur, which we also strongly encourage here. Mm-hmm. And the third path is taking on a role as a growth expert within one of our clients that they really love.
Right.
So it's really interesting path for us. I think that's a big investment place is in that research mm-hmm. team. And we also can't ignore the fact that we've got to bring on more experts on the senior level team. And so that's also a focus is on, continuing to make sure that we've got all of our gaps, if you will, covered mm-hmm. from our, team of senior executives.
So if you look back over this last 3.5 years, what are some of the biggest mistakes you've made?
How long you got?
And how long do I have? We have about another 10 minutes.
So, all right. Well,
Did you have a hard stop?
Yeah, I would say, one of the darkest parts of my founder journey was when I hit burnout. Mm-hmm. It's something we never talk about as founders at all. Mm-hmm. And it's why I ended up getting an executive coach. We don't recognize it because startups are supposed to be hard or growth stage businesses are supposed mm-hmm. to be hard. But I hit some of my worst times on the business and on the personal side, and it just had a negative impact on both my life and my business. And unfortunately, even though I had partners more experienced than myself in many capacities, I didn't get an instruction manual on how to blitz scale my life.
Right.
So I resorted to just muscling through it, taking on more and more, and mm-hmm. it just didn't work very well ever. Eventually I just said enough is enough, worked to develop a set of systems to manage burnout, brought on an executive coach to help me, stick to those systems and hold me accountable and,
right.
And drive me to be a better me. It's a mental tax that founders go through. In fact, there's a lot of psychology and also science around what is referred to as founder burnout. I think you can actually even go into the World Health Organization where they reached a milestone a few years back classifying burnout as a syndrome.
Wow.
Which means that it's in the international classification of diseases. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty important for us to recognize and learn from.
So if somebody somebody was just getting into your industry, wanted to get into your industry, what advice would you give them?
I would say, when you say that from a founder perspective or from the consulting perspective?
Consulting perspective.
From the consulting perspective, are you sure? Just kidding. I think the mantra around consulting is important to recognize where there's a lot of really good things that have come from it. And there's a lot of negative sentiment in the market from where it's, right. where it hasn't quite, mm-hmm. taken on the same level of value. Mm-hmm. I would say, what does being a consultant mean to you? And if the answer is putting together a strategy and walking away that world doesn't work the same way as it used mm-hmm. to. If it's simply working with more than one company at a time mm-hmm. in a fractional capacity that's delivering more and more value, like we do at Orchid Black, then I would say go for it. And mm-hmm. I'll try to recruit you, provided you've got the right expertise that we need.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What would you say are your biggest opportunities and threats in your space in what you're doing?
Yeah. The market's at a pretty interesting height right now for mm-hmm. exits and valuation multiples. Mm-hmm. And we're taking a lot of risk on with our clients at valuations mm-hmm. that they're at, that they could get in the market today. Right. And ultimately that's important to recognize because that's a risk. The focus of what we're doing is what prevents, you know, mitigates that risk, if you will, which is we're focused on 100% year-over-year value creation with every single one of our clients. Mm-hmm. That market rates don't play a role anywhere near 100%. right. So the mitigation for us is just being mindful of where valuations are and where they're trending. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And making sure to invest in companies and point them towards timing around exit. That's going to be the most fulfilling and the most accurate for them, because we are getting to the height of a market. It's important for us to educate the founders that we work with on what that means and how to take advantage of it in some capacities.
If somebody wanted to, somebody listening to this, when this, you know, is thinking, boy, this is really slick, I'd like to work for a company like this, what would you suggest they do?
Oh, wow. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Okay. Jim Barnes Jr. You can find me at Grow Smart, Grow Fast on LinkedIn as well. And ultimately, I offer complimentary office hours each week for whether you're a potential, you know, person that we could bring on board, or you're a founder that's just looking for some help. I'm happy to take a call just to see if there's potential fit in our growth program. Or at the very least, to help point you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that is so great to hear. And not enough people do that. You know, I think we have come to a place, and this didn't just happen overnight, where, you know, executives just aren't, they're just not focused on giving some time away and the importance of doing that. I mean, it's really a good deed.
Well, it's a good deed, but there's also, if you do it the right way, there's some selfish motivation behind it too.
Well, of course there is.
It's kind of the easiest way to both help people and get your
generate
own
generate revenue, generate business. Of course it is.
Right.
You know,
right.
I know that, you know that, but it's still a good deed. Yeah. And that good deed may or may not pay out, as we know, as true. You and I both know.
Very true. Very true.
Not everybody's going to do business with you.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't need everybody to do business with you. You need the right businesses to do business with you.
That's exactly right.
Gosh, well, this has been really, really interesting. I could probably talk to you for another half an hour, but I'm gonna forego doing that, knowing that you have a hard stop here at the top of the hour. But I do want to point one thing. Your website, orchid.black, correct?
Orchid.black, yes.
ORCHID.BLACK.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay. So in case anybody's looking for you, they'll be able to find you. Well, Jim Barnes Jr., co-founder and managing partner of Orchid Black. This has been really interesting. I really want to spend some more time talking to you about the company.
I'd love to talk
really
to you
cool
about
what you're up
well.
To.
thank you very much.
And I thank you for talking with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol.
Carol Schultz here. Thank you so much for listening to Authentically Successful. If you are a successful founder or CEO who would like to be on this program, please visit verticalelevation.com/podcast/apply. If you learned something from this interview and it made a difference, would you please share this episode on LinkedIn? You can also do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend. And if you know somebody that would be a great guest, tag them on LinkedIn or Twitter and let them know about the show and include the hashtag #AuthenticallySuccessful. I love seeing your posts and great suggestions. Lastly, we are regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any, please subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, please go to my website, verticalelevation.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.